This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. With just a few weeks left in the May primary, Senator Kay Hagan launched her first attack ads this week on radio. In it, she charged that one of her GOP challengers, Tom Tillis, arranged for golden parachutes for staffers accused of sex scandals. And outside PACs leveled the same charges against Tillis in television ads. On the House side, the race for the 12th district seat, long held by Democrat Mel Watt, heats up, and political junkie Ken Rudin returns to give us his take on these races. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Frank.
So there's a new ad by the Senate Majority PAC, and it links Republican Senate candidate Tom Tillis to his legislative staffer's affairs. You want to hear it? Here it is.
Sure, let's hear it.
Tom Tillis shared an apartment with his chief of staff when North Carolina News reported that the chief of staff was having an extramarital affair with a lobbyist. He was caught on camera and resigned. Then 1 week later, another Tillis staffer resigns for another sexual relationship with a lobbyist. Tom Tillis' reaction? He claimed he was surprised by his roommate's affair, but then rewarded both aides with taxpayer-paid bonuses. Tom Tillis spending our money to clean up his mess.
There's the ad by Senate Majority PAC. Ken, what does Tillis say about these allegations?
Well, Tillis is actually not saying much about it at all. He is saying that he knew nothing, as the ad says, as you said. That he's saying that even though I shared the apartment with his top aide, Charles Thomas, I did not know anything about the affair. And, of course, he gave them severance pay, both him and another legislative aide. He gave him severance pay. But this happened in 2012. It's interesting that it's become an issue now in April of 2014. But, of course, it is, because Tom Tillis is the leading Republican candidate for the Senate in North Carolina. So, basically, what the Senate PAC is trying to do is to raise more questions about Tom Tillis, and especially as he's approaching the May 6th primary, because what the Democrats want more than anything else is to force the Republicans into a runoff, that which means, of course, Tillis not getting 40% of the vote on May 6th and going into a July runoff. If there's a Republican runoff in July, it means that Tillis has to spend more money, and the conservatives, or at least the primary opposition to Tillis, can attack him for a couple of more months, which is good news for the Democrats.
All right, well, that's part of the answer to this, because this is a $973,000 buy. So the question is it damaging, and a little bit, why now? But I guess even if it wasn't for forcing a runoff for the Democrats, maybe it's never too early to start, huh?
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, you always say that you want to define your opponent before your opponent defines himself. And of course, most people think that Tom Tillis will be the Republican nominee against Kay Hagan in November. But, you know, given the fact that the Republican primary field has its own problems, most notably Greg Brannon, who also has his own accountability questions, there's nothing wrong with the Democratic Party trying to cause some mischief in the Republican primary and make things difficult for the candidate who is yet to be nominated.
Well, that's right. And therein lies another interesting phenomenon. Kay Hagan launched her own first ads, and they target Tillis directly, who, as you suggest, and as you say, has not yet been nominated. Is this a tactic? Why would Kay Hagan want to name him as the opponent already?
One, because the Democratic Party feels that Tillis is the strongest candidate. It shows in the money he's raised. It shows in the endorsements he's received. It shows in the kind of polling numbers he's had from the beginning. And why not go on the assault earlier than later? But that's not unusual. We've seen candidates try to influence the other party by either attacking them or endorsing them. And, of course, Tillis is raising the fact that, well, Kay Hagan knows we're so strong. That's why they're going after us. It's just like what Claire McCaskill did in Missouri in 2012. And what they did is they propped up Todd Akin. And the reason they propped up Todd Akin, because they felt that he would be the weakest Republican. And so what Tillis is doing is doing the opposite. He's saying the opposite, that what the Democrats are doing is they're clearly going after me because I'm the strongest Republican candidate in the race.
Let's turn to the House side. The 12th district, very full field to fill the seat held by Mel Watt. First, tell us about this district.
Well, it's hard to describe it. If anything, it looks like a varicose vein on my leg. I'm teasing. But, of course, this was created in 1992 to elect an African-American member of Congress. And, of course, they combined all the black neighborhoods in this very odd I-85 district. As I said, created in 1992. Mel Watt won the seat in 1992 and was not challenged seriously since. Of course, he resigned in January to become the head of the Federal Housing Finance Agency. And so there were six Democrats in an overwhelmingly Democratic district and an overwhelmingly African-American district running in this primary on May 6th. And it's just fascinating to watch because knowing that Mel Watt could have probably had the seat as long as he wanted, the candidates in this race, the Democratic candidates, know that whoever comes out of the primary, and most likely they'll be going to a runoff in July, whoever comes out of it will probably be a member of Congress for as long as he or she likes.
And who are the contenders?
Well, the number one contender seems to be a state representative by the name of Alma Adams. She's been around for a long time in the state legislature. She's from Greensboro. And what's about? I mean, she's one of those people who've been around a long time, and a lot of members of the African-American political community say it's her turn. It's her time. She's raised the most money. She's been endorsed by national women's groups. She's the only female in the race, which is a big deal. And she's also from Greensboro. And the reason I say that is because there seems to be a Charlotte versus Greensboro rivalry in this primary battle. And so you have a bunch of other candidates from Charlotte that could split that vote, even though most of the votes come from Charlotte. But she is the key person from Greensboro. But she also has other endorsements, female groups, teachers groups, labor organizations. She seems to be the person to beat. And then the question is, who finishes second in the initial May 6th primary? And a lot of people think it could be a state senator from Charlotte named Malcolm Graham. He's been endorsed by Harvey Gantt. Of course, Harvey Gantt, the former African-American mayor. Well, he's still African-American, but he was the former mayor of Charlotte. He ran against Jesse Helms twice in the 1990s. But he doesn't have much money, and of course, he's fearful that the Charlotte vote is going to be split among several candidates and giving Alma Adams an even better head start into the runoff.
Among the many weird things about this district, your varicose veins notwithstanding, is the fact that it includes three major media markets, which means media ads are very expensive and therefore might not play a big factor in this particular race. Is that right?
Well, that's true. But I mean, again, the money is not just for media, for television and media ads. It's for also organization and get out the vote efforts. And of course, having the most money, Alma Adams does have that advantage. I also wonder if there is some kind of bad feelings or depression or sadness going on in Charlotte, given the situation with the former mayor, Patrick Cannon, given the corruption allegations that have been going around in the city, that it just seems like they don't. I wonder if Charlotte, the Democratic class, the Democratic political class in Charlotte, has the same energy that it may have had in previous elections, whereas Alma Adams doesn't seem to be lacking energy at all.
All right. Well, let's talk about another issue. A New York Times piece recently that highlighted the ways in which the battles in the GOP in North Carolina reflect what's happening nationally. How do you see that, Ken?
Well, we don't have to quote the New York Times, because anybody who's been listening to you and I talk about this for months has been, we've been saying this from the beginning. This is completely emblematic of what's going on with the Republican Party. You have the establishment candidate, which ostensibly is Tom Tillis, the Speaker of the State House. And what's fascinating about this is that usually when you think of establishment candidates and, you know, Karl Rove-backed candidates, you think of them as moderates. Well, Tom Tillis is not a moderate, but he is considered the establishment, and therefore the Tea Party is not crazy about Tom Tillis. So they have candidates like George Brannon, who's been backed by Rand Paul and Mike Lee and other libertarian kind of groups, Tea Party groups. And so you have those kind of groups that are opposing the establishment. So what we see in North Carolina is really a microcosm of what's happening to the Republican Party nationwide, the establishment versus the Tea Party. And the fear in the Republican Party is whether these two groups can unite in time in November to defeat the Democratic candidate, in this case, Kay Hagan.
Can the party machinery adjust in time? Certainly, it'll be something for the media to talk about, for analysts to talk about, to look at this. What kind of adjustments get made within a party if there are surprises or clear indications that the party's going one way or another?
Well, that's a good question. Indiana is a perfect example. In 2012, Dick Lugar had been in the Senate since 1977, and a conservative but definitely an establishment Republican. Republicans rarely had to lift a finger to get him reelected. But when he was beaten badly in the Republican primary by Richard Murdoch, suddenly the Republican Party had to reconfigure and say that all these terrible things we were thinking about Richard Murdoch are no longer the case. What I think Tom Tillis has done, to his credit, is that he's really spent most of his time campaigning again, not against Greg Brennan or Mark Harris or any of his Republican opponents on May 6th. He's been going after Kay Hagan from the beginning, and hopefully for him and for the Republican Party, that lack of personal attacks will help unite the party in time. But we've seen in previous elections in Delaware, in Nevada against Harry Reid, the Republican Party so badly split during the primary that they failed to unite in time and they lost many opportunities. There's no question that the Senate race in North Carolina is a key opportunity for the Republican Party if they're going to win a majority in November.
All right, Ken, always a pleasure to talk with you. Pull up those support hose.
You're so vain. I thought this song was about you.
I should have heard it coming. Ken Rudin, political junkie. More about Ken and the link to his scuttle button puzzle on our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, our conversation with the 2nd District Congressional candidate, Keith Crisco, on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.